Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. You're watching Consider This. Tonight on the show, I have joining me Datuk Satina Said Saleh, Council Member of the National Education Advisory Council for the 2018 to 2020 session. Welcome to the show, Datuk Satina.
Thank you very much, Melissa, and thank you for having me here today.
Tonight we're going to be talking about education. You've got lots of experience in education, having started as a teacher in La Salle, PJ,
that's right,
1977, and you've been in the ministry, you've held all these different positions. Now you're part of the National Education Advisory Council, and I kind of want to understand what this council does in terms of its objectives. So it was set up way back in 2010, but now it's looking at as a consultancy role to the Ministry of Education.
Advisory role.
Would you mind elaborating what it was initially set up for and what it currently wants to achieve?
All right. So basically, Melissa, the National Education Advisory Council, it is set up under the purview of Education Act, Section 10. So it is not a creation of any minister for that matter. There is a provision in the Act, but depending on whether the minister would like to use that provision to set up this council.
Okay.
So in 2010, the Ministry of Education somehow capitalized on the provision and they started creating this council. So there have been many individuals, experts, I have lost count how many of them, the different groups. And so this is my first time basically after Pakatan Harapan took over, and they invited me to be one of the 11. Actually, initially there were only 7 member councils in the district, in the group.
So there's 11 members.
11 members. There are 11 altogether. And the council, we are experts in our own areas. So for example, I'm an education expert and I do policy a lot. And then we have our chairman, Tan Sri Dato Dr. Wan Muhammad Zahid, who was formerly the Director General. His areas is also not only just management and leadership, but also on policy. As a matter of fact, I worked very closely with him that time. And then we have people like Tan Sri Yong Pokong.
Okay.
He's actually an industry captain.
But also very passionate about the education system and education reform.
Indeed, indeed. He is one man that should not have time at all, but he has time. So but what I'm trying to put across, the level of commitment that all 11 of us are having in making this council.
Right.
Advisory council, a working one.
So what is the council's main role? What does it hope to achieve?
Yes, the first thing that our role actually is to give independent advice, opinions, even to a certain extent suggest problem solving to the Minister of Education. The government in Malaysia, but we work closely with the Minister of Education. So in fact, as a matter of fact, we even have our own chat group.
So when for efficiency.
Yes, for efficiency. And the minister is free to seek advice from us. Just for example, that he has some issues on the ground. So they just say, Tan Sri, probably can we get the team to come and meet me? So sometime, actually with Dr. Mazid, last time that we met him sometime at home.
Okay.
In the evening, to have a chat, And at the same time, when you talk about education policy, because they are very much into policy, we will talk about the span of level, from preschool, K-12 education, meaning it's primary and secondary school, right until higher education.
Okay.
Including technical, vocational.
I mean, that span to me is
huge.
Amazing, because it is a very, that range is big,
very big.
Many people forget often how much the Education Ministry has to actually look at.
Indeed.
This is, of course, after the Education Ministry has been combined into
combined
one.
Again, yes.
Okay, so because your background is in education policy, I want to delve into that. I want to delve deeper into the complexity of putting together education policy.
Right.
Now, talk to me about that range. So is it broken down when you're crafting policy for education, are you looking at preschool all the way till tertiary education as the scope of policy, or is it broken down into these different age groups?
Okay, actually, in the Ministry of Education, even though they are now one ministry, but we have two separate sort of a management. So we have the Director General of Education, the Ketua KPPM, we call it, in the Ministry of Education, mean Kementerian Pelajaran, they call it. It's taking care of schools. Then we also have a DG for the higher education that will take care of also polytechnics, public universities, especially the 20 public universities and so on. So when we do policy, basically we focus, like my focus has always been looking at policy of K-12 education.
Okay.
I use that nomenclature K-12 so that it's easier for us to refer to school.
K-12 meaning primary to secondary.
Okay. Yes. All right. Yes, that's right. Okay. So we don't do it together. Mm-hmm. We have to look at, I think if you are aware, in the system of education, the most sought after by parents, they have got their own views actually when they are in school.
Right, of course. I mean that is when parents have the most expectations.
That's
from
right.
The education system and the teachers.
That's right.
And also the children
the
as
children,
well
yeah.
Within that K-12 period.
Right, yeah.
I want to delve deeper into that. So, you know, as this council, it has an advisory role to the Minister of Education.
Mm-hmm.
What were some of the most recent advice you gave to the minister?
Okay, actually, I think many of us are educationists. Some of them are professors and expert subjects. I must mention first, before I go further on what we're going to present to the Prime Minister or the Minister of Education,
the acting Minister of Education.
So what we have done, what we have achieved together with for the last 20 over months, actually looking at the special needs children. Actually, the council actually played a very important role in even preparing the preparation of the guidelines. And the previous minister, the former minister, in fact, this is one of
Dr.
the biggest...
Masli Malik.
Yeah, Dr. Masli.
He was very passionate about this.
Very passionate about it, and he even implemented the policy of zero reject policy. So now, if you have children, special needs children, you cannot reject them. You have to allow them to be enrolled in schools. So I think that is amazing, because we only sometimes worry about children in the urban area.
Sure.
We are worried about whether you are getting the right teachers or not. There are children in the rural area, in the far away places, when their basic needs are not met. So like these special children, they have been neglected for a long,
falling
long time.
Falling through the cracks,
And not enough with that as well. Some of them because I used to teach in Sabah and in Sarawak. So even our teachers were sleeping sometimes in the classroom in the night time, and late and morning they would just put them again as a classroom. I think this is one thing that we have been part of it together with supporting Dr. Masli, advising him, whereby that teachers' welfare must be taken care of. I think he built many schools, many sort of a small, not school, many accommodation for teachers. A small place like Rumah Panjang, whatever it is, you know. And he repaired a lot of dilapidated school.
All right, I want to come back and talk about some of the successes, particularly about teacher quality, teacher welfare. Let's continue this conversation shortly on Consider This. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. I'm chatting tonight to Datuk Satina Said Saleh, educationist and council member of the National Education Advisory Council. Now, just before the break, you touched on something really important, teacher quality and teacher welfare. You talked about how the former education minister had done a lot in terms of improving teacher welfare. I want you to elaborate a little bit on that, because I think that's really important, an important area of education reform, which is often not spoken about or given emphasis on. Teacher professionalism, teacher career opportunity advancement, and welfare.
That's right. One of the initiatives that we're going to do, based on all this information that we have collected, would be looking at teacher quality and teacher professionalism. We're not even using the word teacher. We're going to talk about educators.
Okay, so we're moving away from
teachers into
educator
educators.
Okay.
Because teachers, once upon a time, teachers used to be like, we used to give information to my students.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you seek information and you teach them in the classroom.
Right.
It's gone already.
It's like rote learning.
Yes, yeah. But nowadays, they can get the information at the, you know, at the tips of their fingers.
They're so much smarter than we were.
So we need to sort of facilitate and educate them.
Okay.
How actually, for example, using information, in the best way of using information,
okay.
Handling the information so that you will not be using the wrong information while you are learning and building yourself.
So this changing role of teachers or educators, right? It's no doubt it's changing.
Right.
Are our educators equipped for this, for the changing role? Is the ministry aware and
right.
doing things to, you know, to allow teachers to evolve in this role?
That's right. The ministry is definitely very aware of that. Mm. And it has been there for the last how many years? But the journey is very long, Melissa. You know, you can't transform the education system within a short time.
Okay.
So this is one of the reasons sometimes I felt very, very sad when people expect everything to be done within 1 year,
mm.
20. It's not that, I'm blaming anybody. But I think we need to have a little bit of patience. But while we are preparing teachers, while we are trying to equip teachers to be able to play a role of facilitators and educators, the journey must continue.
Can I just ask you, why does the journey take such a long time? What are some of the institutional challenges that cause educational reform to take such a long time, a long process? Why is it?
So one of the things actually is mindset.
Mindset?
Mindset and comfort zone.
Of?
Because comfort zone of not only teachers,
uh-huh.
but also at the same time the institution, the people around that as well, you know? I think just for example, if we are very happy with certain things that we do, even personally,
mm-hmm.
we are doing it the same way and we are getting results, but we are not looking at what's happening outside the world, you know, what's coming.
Mm.
So that is quite a challenge because we also have teachers, some of the teachers, who are a bit, you know, they're not really open.
Right.
To this new development.
Well, they've been doing things a certain way for a long time.
Long time.
So change is always uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable, yes.
Okay. And as an advisor to the minister and the ministry,
yes.
what would your advice be to change the mindset, to speed the process along?
I think one thing that we have to do, I, you know, you can see, Melissa, we all already passed our time. Actually, we don't have any more sort of ambition or something we want to achieve. But we do in the council, most of us, we have retired, most of us. So the only thing that we want to do actually is to see the system is going to be transformed.
Mm.
The children will get better education.
Okay.
Teachers will be more exposed to new way of educating our children. So these are the things that we're trying to do. So I think we need to, actually many of us, we go to school.
Right.
Actually, we talk to teachers.
Okay, so you have on-the-ground exposure.
Yes,
you talk to the,
yes,
the teachers who
yes.
are teaching classrooms
yes.
right now.
We have education with them.
Right.
So it is sort of a motivation as well, so that they will be aware if you are not willing to change, if you want to be totally comfortable, you will be obsolete.
Okay.
You will be of no use, you know.
Mm.
I even give that example. I have to learn a lot of new things.
Right.
Despite of, you know, we are not young anymore, you know, but we need to do a lot of things, you see.
So that's another question, right? Is the fear of change coming from the fear of being ill-equipped, a lack of skill to adapt to these new challenges?
That's right.
Or is it a certain dependency
Mm-mm.
on receiving instruction from the ministry? So that hampers the way they want to teach perhaps more creatively.
That's right, yes. Both.
A bit of both?
Yes, a bit of both, I would say. One, I think in town, in the rural area, urban area, it is a lot easier to get teachers to learn new things.
Sure, okay.
But for teachers in the rural areas, there are very limited resources that we have.
Mm.
And the last few years has been quite difficult in terms of budget as well. But notwithstanding that, we are also playing quite a, and I'm one of them actually, together with my team, we are very much championing the public-private partnership.
Are there dangers to allowing the private sector into our schools?
No, okay. Not personally, because we have experienced it. Actually, because I feel the private sectors, they will be able to come in and actually not only support in terms of financial, but they also have the knowledge.
Can you elaborate a little bit when you talk about private-public partnerships?
Yes.
What do you mean by that specifically to the education sector?
Okay. Do you still remember, Melissa, about the Trust School program?
Yes.
The Trust School program, actually, during that time, I was still the education advisor to Khazana.
Okay.
Yeah, so we started in 2010. Initially, they had only 10 schools, five in Johor, five in Sarawak. They had people to fund. It wasn't cheap. It cost millions, you know, to transform the whole school, the ecosystem of the school. But the problem that the challenges they had during that time, teachers not willing to be part of it.
Okay.
Some of them, not all of them. But at the end of it, after 2 months, they were just like there for you because they feel, oh, I'm learning new things. I'm telling my children are very happy. My children are coming to school without me lecturing them tomorrow, please finish your homework or whatever it is. So these are actually, it's already proven.
So private sector comes in with the financial resources,
yes,
and takes away that burden from the education ministry?
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
They just do the topping up.
Okay.
They don't give cash to the school, they don't give money, but they upskill teachers. Okay. They do capacity buildings.
All right. No? So why is there such a hesitation to adopt a private-public partnership for the education system?
There is not now. I think things have changed quite a bit, but I think the only thing that I have mentioned many times that I mentioned to even to the Minister of Education as well. I personally, actually, because he told me, Satina, you are going to champion this. So I'm passionate because I think after 9 years now, I've been outside, so I do know how the private sectors are working. I could see that they are very genuine people.
Mm.
They are the people who are willing to give a lot for the sake of the children.
Right.
It is not about them anymore. It is about building up the school.
Is this part of their CSR?
Yes,
okay.
CSR.
So there's real opportunity to tap the private sector for the benefit of our
That's
children.
Right.
Okay, wonderful. Yeah,
but the ministry need to structure them properly.
Okay.
You need to have a proper way of addressing them so that they would be able to come easily. I think sometimes they have issues with officers. This is the mindset again.
Bureaucracy. Okay.
Yes,
the bureaucracy has become a stumbling block
to
for the private sector to want to participate in the education sector.
I think we must always remember now, education is not the sole, the government is not the sole owner of education. It is a sharing thing. Everybody wants to have a share in educating their children. So you can't say that Ministry of Education is the best in delivering education. No, not anymore.
I love that. So education is not the sole, the government is not the sole owner of education.
Yes.
All right, we're going to be back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go anywhere. Stay with us right here on Consider This. Thanks for staying with me on Consider This. I'm speaking to educationist Datuk Satina Said Saleh. Now, as a council member of the National Education Advisory Council, what do you think are some of the real opportunities for education reform in Malaysia?
Yes.
The most that you think, the biggest opportunity that we have.
That's right.
Here.
I think first thing we have to put at what is happening now.
Sure.
It's everything is moving so fast.
Mm.
In 10 years' time, in 20 years' time, we don't know what type of job that will be available. So we know English actually is one of the most important aspect that our students must be exposed. We want them to be well-versed in English. I think this is the biggest issue in our country still.
Mm-hmm.
Because our Sekolah Kebangsaan, the graduates, even our public universities, some of them, they are not able to communicate well. So we talk about education, Melissa. At the end of it, one day, the contents will not be done by us anymore.
Mm.
You know, Jack Ma talked about it. Yuval Harari talked about it. You know, what type of education will happen. But what we need to actually, the opportunity that we need to do actually is to spend more time in giving values to the education. we need to emphasize the importance of values. We need to emphasize the opportunity to have open discussion.
Right.
The ownership between ministry, teachers, students, and community, parents as well. So at the end of it, this job of transforming education cannot be done by the Ministry of Education alone or higher education. It has to be done by parents. You know, this is the biggest issue, like Jawi recently.
Right.
You know, I personally believe you must teach Islamic education in the school, but you cannot be teaching the whole too many activities, Islamic activities in our sekolah kebangsaan, and then we'll not be able to attract, for example, our non-Malay citizens to come in. These are the things that we feel we must have a school of choice. Sekolah Kebangsaan to become the school of choice.
To become the school of choice.
Yes, that is my aspiration, actually.
And one way of doing that, I mean, the different ways of doing that include looking at the curriculum, looking at teacher quality, and the medium of instruction as
language,
well.
Can I
touch on English? Because you've been an educator for more than 30 years now, right? You've been within, you've been in the system, you've been outside of the system.
Yes.
The conversation about English has... is a perennial conversation, one that we keep coming back to.
Yes.
And now we have the acting education minister, our prime minister, acting education minister. I'm sure this conversation will come back to the fore.
Certainly, yeah.
What do you make about now? Having said that, your position is that you want to see more English.
Yes, yes.
A better understanding about
understand.
The use
command
of
the language,
command
yes,
of English.
Yeah.
What do you make of the backlash towards, you know, the use of English, or the failure of certain policies to implement English as a teaching, as a language in schools?
To be frank with you, Melissa, I am actually looking forward to seeing him, wanting to hear from the Prime Minister, and wanting us to also put forward what we want to say as well. You know, I'm not talking about medium, you know, English as medium for instruction. I'm talking about how we can actually have more English in school. This is my own personal
more
opinion.
More English in school?
Yes.
In what way?
You can have more periods, probably, more subjects to be taught in English.
Okay.
You know, we have the DLP program. But because at the end of it, those that will be losing out will be the Malays from the rural areas. If we don't allow this, they will not be exposed to this. So we have done some sort of a kajian and some sort of survey, you know. Ideas was one of them that did it. And
right.
I was also partly involved here at think tank. And the people in the rural area in Sabah, Sarawak, they want English.
Are there enough teachers to implement this policy?
Yes, that is actually our challenges.
Okay.
We don't have enough teachers, but when we don't have enough teachers, doesn't mean that we don't have to implement it. We have to do it, and at the same time, we go along in preparation as well.
Okay.
But now we have technology.
Mm.
Once upon a time, when we did the PPSMI, it was not working very well,
right?
Because during that time we didn't have that much of technology, even though they were given CDs and whatnot.
Yeah, so,
you know?
So one of the drawbacks of that was said that teachers couldn't adapt.
Yes, couldn't
to the demand of, you know, teaching.
That's
English.
Right, yeah.
So you're saying now technology has advanced to the point where that will help
that
the teachers
could, yes,
as a
could
tool.
Help, yes, as
okay.
a tool, but at the same time we must also prepare our teachers. It doesn't mean that we just leave them, oh no, actually don't enough teachers, doesn't matter. I had a chat with the current Director General of Education.
Mm.
So I'm excited because I know that she's a brilliant girl. She's smart and she has vision and mission. We were together doing policy.
Okay.
So things that I think she would do that I am very much you know, going along with it, I think allow the more implementation of teaching of English, either DLP or DLP Plus or whatever we want to call it, you know, technology. But at the same time, we also prepare our teachers.
Right, because they are the key, right?
Capacity building is a must. The government must spend enough money for human resource.
Okay.
Yeah?
In the last minute that we have left, Dato' Safina, can I just get your thoughts on the communication of these reform agenda in the education policy ministry to all the stakeholders, to parents, to students, to the educators?
Yes.
You know, there's an impatient public out there waiting for you know, reform of the education ministry. What thoughts do you have on that?
The reform has been done gradually.
Okay.
You cannot totally reform anything within 6 months. So we have been at this journey. For us, the NEAC, we cannot actually divulge everything now.
Okay.
We need to talk to the minister first.
Right.
We need to get that endorsement then it will be published. It will be open, and then we'll work on how do we do it best, you know, for our children.
So things are being done behind the scenes, but
indeed,
unable to be communicated as yet.
Not
because
as yet.
You need to review policies.
Yes, yes.
No knee-jerk reactions
no,
from
no.
the ministry.
And that is a very important thing. And one more thing that I also would like to touch on the PPSMI. People used to say, why is the Tun Mahathir keep on talking about it?
Mm.
Actually, being able to think in English is something as in learning the language itself.
Being able to think,
to
in,
think
English
in English
is as important.
Yes, because in the future, you can't think certain things in different language, because the language of the future, the language of whatever technology we have, is all in English.
Mm.
You know. And then secondly, we also must look at the values. Agama Islam that didn't actually, or values or moral education did not actually really, it was not totally successful, I must say. So we still, they learn agama, but at the same time, the practice is totally different thing.
Right.
Integrity.
So embedding those key values.
Those key values. And
education.
Also unity. Because in our country, we talk about unity as well, integration, social integration, which is, I'm very passionate about it. And digital learning is something else.
Well, you know what? There's so many topics that we need to cover. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have
yes.
on this episode of
right.
Consider This. But we're going to keep the conversation about education reform going right here on this show. We hope you stay with us. I'm Melissa Idris signing off for tonight. Thank you for watching and good night.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate
yes,
that. Yeah.